Checking on the Arts is made possible by the Memphis Symphony Orchestra. A week from today at 7:30 at the Cannon Center, Yo-Yo Ma joins the Memphis Symphony Orchestra. It would take more time than we have to give you Yo-Yo Ma's complete biography. I'll just hit a few highlights. He has a discography of over 75 albums, including more than 15 Grammy Award winners. He's made several successful recordings that defy categorization, among them Hush with Bobby McFerrin, Appalachia Waltz and Appalachian Journey with Mark O'Connor and Edgar Meyer, and three albums with the Silk Road Ensemble. His new recording, The Goat Rodeo Sessions, with bassist Edgar Meyer, mandolinist Chris Teeley, and fiddler Stuart Duncan, was released in October of last year. Across this full range of releases, Yo-Yo Ma remains one of the best-selling recording artists in the classical field. All of his recent albums have quickly entered the Billboard chart of classical bestsellers, remaining in the top 15 for extended periods. In fall of 2009, Sony Classical released a box set of over 90 albums to commemorate Mr. Ma's 30 years as a Sony recording artist. He's received numerous awards, including the Avery Fisher Prize, the Glenn Gould Prize, the National Medal of the Arts, the Dan David Prize, the Sonning Prize, the World Economic Forum's Crystal Award, and the Presidential Medal of Freedom. Mr. Ma serves as UN Ambassador of Peace and as a member of the President's Committee on the Arts and Humanities. He's performed for 8 American presidents, most recently at the invitation of President Obama on the occasion of the 56th inaugural ceremony. Yo-Yo Ma, it's a great treat to talk to you once again. I appreciate you taking the time.
Well, it's great to talk with you, too. Have you picked up yet another instrument lately?
No. I'm afraid I'm going to have to stick with piano. But I wanted to talk to you about, of course, your performance here with the Memphis Symphony Orchestra. We're very excited by this. You're going to be bringing us one of the great romantic concerti, the Dvorak Cello Concerto. And this is a piece that I think a lot of people know, but it may not be a piece that a lot of people know a lot about. There's a lot of interesting history that goes along with this, as well as some very interesting musical factors. And I know that you studied it quite a bit. So tell us about your feelings about this wonderful concerto.
Well, I've studied it quite a bit because I'm really old. The first time I played it as a cello lesson was when I was 12, and I'm 56. So, you know, that means I've been essentially playing it for 44 years.
Yeah, well, you probably know it pretty well by now.
It's pretty strange. And you know what? I'm still trying to get it right. But I think this is one of those pieces you never tire of, because it in a funny way, since so much of Dvorak takes from nature, you can play it indoors, outdoors. You can play it when birds are singing. You can play it when, you know, during a storm. It all is fine. You know, it's because it's part of what's incorporated in the piece. And I think, so in a way, it's one of the pieces that's so repeatable, also because it evokes a life lived. So I think part of maybe what you're referring to, Daryl, is the sense that, you know, so Dvorak, for some of you may know that, you know, he came from the old Czechoslovakia, from Bohemia, and he was invited by a lady to come to the United States to teach at the National Conservatory, I think in New York, in the 1890s. So he came and he wrote the concerto while he was in New York. And he traveled to Iowa during his stay there only for a couple of years, you know, and went to Minnehaha Falls and went to the Chicago Columbian Exhibition, which was the celebration of Columbus's 400th anniversary, which is in 1893. He went there. So he and what's so strange is that during his time, you know, he taught these various students, would always interrupt his lessons when he knew a ship was coming in or a train was leaving, because he was fascinated by trains and boats. So he had this, you know, great passion for that. And then what happened was that his students took on his values of saying, always write what is around you. Don't just take from me, but listen to what is around. You know, be involved in the environment you live in. And so his students ended up teaching George Gershwin, Aaron Copland, and Duke Ellington. In a short period as a teacher, he met students, influenced them, and he became kind of, in that sense, the musical grandfather of these three iconic American composers and musicians. So so that's, in a way, a little background on him. And this piece, which he wrote in New York, is, you know, he was a big family man. He came here without his family, missed his children and his wife. And so you could hear a lot of longing. You could feel, you could hear the arc of someone's life that is being narrated and described by the various instruments. And he was finished with the work when he found out that his beloved sister-in-law had just died.
Mm-hmm.
And he changed upon hearing that news. He changed the whole ending of the piece, and at the very end, there's, you know, it slowly sort of gets softer and softer while there's a rising line in the cello, and finally the solo violin comes in with a beautiful quote from his sister-in-law's favorite song. And in the manuscript, he writes, right after the solo, "For those that know me, they would understand. And for those that don't, it doesn't matter."
Mm-hmm. Yes. That's such a lovely moment when that solo violin comes in. It's literally heartbreaking.
Exactly. And it's sort of like, and in a way, it kind of exemplifies what music is all about. That you could, you know, if you know the biographical aspects, that's great. But actually, if you don't, that's fine too. The music can stand on its own.
Yes.
What a lovely way of actually transcending the passing of a beloved relative and friend, and to say, okay, I'm going to just put it in there. It's okay if you know. It's okay if you don't.
It's truly a lovely piece. Kurt Mazur, I think, said that that homesickness sort of effused every part of this piece. Dvorak, of course, only spent a few years here, and basically the whole time was longing to go home, back to his beloved Bohemia.
Yeah. Listen, out of 34 years of playing on the cello on tour, and of 34 years of being married, I spent 22 years away from home.
Yeah, yeah.
So I can really sympathize with that longing, because when you go away and your children take their first step or say their first word, that moment is irretrievable. So the longing is very much understood. And I think at the beginning of my career, it was kind of unusual that I would be on a plane just having come back from Asia or Africa or Europe, and I'd be on the last leg, like from going from New York to Boston, and I'd feel like some alien. Nowadays, so many people do that all the time, and because we live in this kind of era. And so I think we have a lot of people who can respond to the longing for home.
We're speaking with cellist Yo-Yo Ma. He'll be appearing with the Memphis Symphony Orchestra next Monday, October 22nd at 7:30 p.m. at the Cannon Center for the Performing Arts. For tickets and more information, and there still are some tickets available, 537-2525 or memphissymphony.org. Something I was curious about, of course, you get lots of invitations every year and can choose from many, many different places to play. I know that you are very involved in music education and especially in outreach into the community by classical musicians and by symphonies and orchestras. And, of course, that's something that the Memphis Symphony has really been concentrating on in the last couple of years especially. Did that have any sway with you in terms of your deciding to come and play here in Memphis?
Absolutely. I think both, you know, the Memphis Symphony and Iris, so Mayan, I've met both in Memphis when I was playing with Iris, and then also met her, and because she's also the conductor of the Chicago Sinfonietta.
Right.
And we met just as she became the oncoming chief conductor and, you know, artistic director of the Chicago Sinfonietta, and Michael Stern and Mayan know one another. So we're kind of like good colleagues working together on really looking at what each community is working on, responding to need. And obviously, one of the things that is of crucial importance is what is happening to our public school education. And not only in the sense of, yes, obviously we want to aim for 100% graduation rate. We're all trying to go for 0% unemployment. We know that's probably not possible, but we can certainly reduce it. And the same thing with education is, what is the education for? What kind of person are we trying to educate for? What kind of work that our nation may be involved in doing? So people that are much smarter than me have been saying, we need a workforce that is collaborative and flexible and imaginative and innovative. Would you agree with that?
Absolutely, absolutely. And it's something that I think is a big problem.
And so we're thinking, so at the same time we're looking at, so saying, some people say, well, the arts, that's frivolous. That's not important, because what we need is really math and science. So STEM. I'd like to turn STEM into STEAM, adding the A and the arts. Not because so much that I think people should play the cello. I think it's great to play the cello. But I think, in fact, what music or the arts do is precisely address the qualities of collaboration and flexibility and imagination and innovation. So somehow what is at the core of what we need is provided by the very values that practicing the arts does. So I think in terms of public school education, you know, what the Memphis Symphony is doing, what Iris does, what many, many people are involved in doing, is actually essential in unleashing and nurturing those very qualities we need in our students, so that they can go from, I have to do this, to I really want to do this.
Well, I think that you're exactly right, and I'm going to start saying that we don't need STEM, we need STEAM. So I'll help you spread that word.
Great, please do. And that's great, because, you know, I just was talking to at a conference in Riverside, California, to Will.i.am, who is so devoted to getting from the neighborhood he came from in L.A. to adopt those programs that will bring kids to start to invent things and to do things that will do for them what he was able to do through music with his mother's help. And that's so that he became passionate. He then became involved in trying to do what you're describing, what we know the local orchestras are doing, or the arts organizations. And I have one other person I want to mention that from Memphis, you know, there's this kind of dance that was underground for several decades called Jukin.
Sure,
and Damian Wetzel, with whom I work with for the Presidential Committee on Arts and Humanities, saw a video on YouTube one day of Lil Buck.
Right, right.
Who's now touring with Madonna and whatever. And just said, God, you have to see this guy. And we met, and we've been now doing art strikes in so many places, in Chicago and New York and L.A., in China, went to Beijing and did something. And, you know, he would tell people, he's like 21, and he says, I've been doing this, I've been practicing like 9-10 hours a day for 10 years, do the amazing things that I do. And but I'm so passionate about it. We would go into schools. He would talk to the kids who would just like be watching bug-eyed. How can you do that with the human body? And how do you, can you be so inventive? And how can you be so? And he, because he's so passionate, it's so totally what he loves to do. And he wants to bring this to the world and say, look at this. This is amazing stuff. This is what the arts can do. They can truly inspire, and through making people curious, it actually helps all of learning. And that's the thing that I think, that's what music can do.
Well, I think so too, and it's great to know that you're working so passionately on this, and we certainly are here also.
Yeah, and that's so great, because I think this is the first time in my life that I've heard two secretaries of state say, actually it's Condi Rice and mm-hmm. George Shultz,
sure.
Both of them say that public education has become a national security issue. So it's gone beyond sort of like, okay, it's an unsolvable problem, it's a very difficult thing, and it's your fault, it's my fault, it's his fault, it's her fault. It doesn't matter whose fault it is. It's something we have to solve for our own future and for our children's future. So I don't know whether there's anything more important that we should band together for.
I think you're exactly right.
Hooray to Memphis for doing it, for trying so hard. I know there are people that tried really hard to get to the point where the public schools would qualify for the $100 million grant from Gates
right.
Foundation, and hooray for that. Hooray for the Memphis Symphony, for all the people that are actually jumping in to say, we have to do it.
Yes, absolutely, and it's a wonderful thing to see. It's exciting to see, and it's working. The symphony is very successful, and like a lot of orchestras who are having a lot of trouble today, the Memphis Symphony is doing very, very well. And I think it's because they are out there, because they're in the community, because people see them, they know who they are, and I think that makes a big difference.
That's right, exactly. So, go for it.
Yo-Yo Ma, this has been a great treat. I know you're busy. I appreciate you taking the time to talk with me today. We're very much looking forward to your performance. I happen to know that you're going to take a little time while you're here and meet with some of the Memphis Symphony members and some of those folks, so we appreciate that also. Thanks again.
Well, thank you so much, and there's a lot to do, and there's a lot to celebrate.
My guest today, cellist Yo-Yo Ma, appearing with the Memphis Symphony Orchestra, performing the Dvorak Cello Concerto next Monday, October 22nd at 7:30 p.m. at the Cannon Center. For tickets and more information, 537-2525 or memphissymphony.org.